This is Family Policy Matters. This program is produced by the North Carolina Family Policy Council, a pro-family research and education organization dedicated to strengthening and preserving the family. And now from the studio, here's John Rustin, president of the North Carolina Family Policy Council.
Thank you for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. It's our pleasure to have Dr. Chris Gasek with us on the program. Chris is Senior Fellow for Regulatory Policy at the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. In addition to his great work at FRC, Chris has previously worked at the Heritage Foundation, the American Enterprise Institute, as a law clerk at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit, and at the Federal Communications Commission. Chris is with us today to talk about an important case currently pending before the U.S. Supreme Court called Whole Women's Health v. Hellerstedt, which involves a legal challenge to an abortion safety law that was passed in the state of Texas. Oral arguments in that case were heard earlier this month, and FRC was one of several pro-life groups to file a Friend of the Court brief in support of the Texas law. We'll be talking with Chris about that case, why it matters, and when we can expect a ruling from the High Court. Chris, thanks so much for being with us today on Family Policy Matters.
It's good to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you with us, Chris. As we begin, why don't you give us a little bit of background on the whole women's health case, how it began, and what key questions are pending before the Supreme Court?
Well, the if you recall, a few years ago, there was a pretty horrific abortion scandal that came out of the state of Pennsylvania, out of the city of Philadelphia, when authorities raided the abortion facility run by a doctor named Kermit Gosnell.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And there were a lot of prosecutions, and Gosnell's in prison now, and people who worked with him went to prison. And one of the things that came to light was that there were a lot of unsafe medical conditions, and the state of Pennsylvania basically hadn't regulated properly. They really hadn't even conducted audits or inspections of abortion facilities for decades. Well, a lot of states reacted to this, maybe like 10 to 15 states reacted to this and decided to re-examine their abortion regulations. And one of the states that did this was Texas. And they, if you recall, there was this just huge battle in the state of Texas in 2013 over a bill, HB2. A couple of the provisions are now being examined constitutionally up at the Supreme Court of the United States, and two of those provisions have to do with safety, and one in particular has to do with the fact that doctors who perform abortions will be required to have admitting privileges at basically a hospital within 20 miles of the abortion facility. So if you're doing an abortion and you're a physician who's performing one, you have to be able to admit your patient into a hospital. And then there was another provision that essentially upgraded the quality of the facilities that could perform abortions. And so there's also a kind of a category called ambulatory surgical centers. And it turns out that earlier, about 2003, the abortions after 15 weeks had to be carried out in these ambulatory surgical centers in Texas. But after the Gosnell events, the state of Texas had just said this applies to all abortions. And those provisions having to do with something being an ambulatory surgical center have to do with things like, having hallways that are wide enough for gurneys to get in and driveway spaces, that an ambulance can get to. And it turns out in the state of Texas, there's something on the order of 400 of these ambulatory surgical centers. So it's not like this is a rare facility, and a number of the abortion facilities in Texas do meet these standards. In fact, they're the ones that perform the late-term abortions. So that's the crux of it. And so these two provisions were challenged. The idea was that they imposed an undue burden on the right to have an abortion because they made it too difficult for doctors to do abortions. So that's sort of the gist of the case.
Yeah, well, thank you, Chris. That's helpful background information to have. And fortunately, North Carolina in that same year, in 2013, sought somewhat similar legislation to what Texas passed. But I know that all eyes were really on Texas because of the litigation over HB2. And so, as you stated, there are several provisions of that legislation that have been the subject of litigation. Now, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit ruled in favor of Texas in this case, fortunately. Talk a little bit about the Fifth Circuit ruling, if you will, and why it is really important to the potential outcome of this case.
Well, right. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit essentially upheld these provisions. And then, you know, the abortion clinics have challenged that ruling. The reason this is important is that with the death of Justice Scalia, if the Supreme Court were to have a 4-4 holding about the constitutionality of these provisions, essentially what would happen is that the Fifth Circuit decision would stay in place. And that's the most significant thing. The decision was actually a very good decision. It was written by Judge Edith Jones down in the Fifth Circuit provision. But one of the things that they recognize is that the Fifth Circuit noted as a matter of fact from evidence presented by the by Planned Parenthood itself that there were something on the order of 220 women every year in Texas who end up going to emergency rooms after having abortions. So that's quite a large number, and I think it kind of gives you the sense of why this is important. We said at the opening of our brief, people who visit a dentist, eye doctor, dermatologist, or ear, nose, and throat specialist do not typically leave in an ambulance. Yet this is a frightening and commonly occurrence that happens at abortion facilities. And it's really not acceptable that you would have these kinds of health problems. And the Fifth Circuit took note of this. They said during these proceedings, Planned Parenthood conceded, this is a quote actually, that at least 210 women in Texas annually must be hospitalized after seeking an abortion. That was a significant ruling, and a lot of times the lower courts don't come out in favor of the state regulations, but here they did.
Chris, I think it's important for our listeners to recognize that while we heard a lot about the Kermit Gosnell situation and just the atrocities that took place at his clinic in Pennsylvania, that this was really a reaction not only to that case, but also just applying common sense to the circumstances that you've so well described, where you've got oftentimes an invasive surgical procedure that's taking place, and because of Supreme Court rulings in past years and past decades, abortion has been treated differently in many respects to other surgical types of operations. And so, and in many cases, abortion doctors have gotten a pass on this and have not had to face the scrutiny and the real common sense regulations that other surgical centers have had to. And so, just like in the state of Texas and in the discussions about this similar legislation in North Carolina, the lawmakers understood not only were they dealing with the atrocities that came to light as a result of the Kermit Gosnell case, but also just the real life circumstances of what's taking place at abortion clinics across our nation. And that's exactly what happened here in Texas. Now, Chris, let's talk specifically about some of the arguments that were made by opponents of the Texas law when this case appeared before the Supreme Court for oral arguments. I know that one is that the Texas regulations have resulted in the closing of a number of abortion clinics in that state. Is this an accurate argument, and why would this be an issue the Supreme Court might consider in how it ultimately rules in this case?
Well, let me just say that these statistics and how you analyze them, I mean, let's say that, you know, it's true that there have been some closures. That's normally not a defense for a regulatory scheme, I think, that you would find in any other context, right? I mean, the point is that, and in fact, this argument is going on in other places in the Fifth Circuit, in Mississippi, for example. The claim is being made that all the abortion facilities in that state will have to close. I mean, it's sort of like the regulator sort of holding a gun to its own head and saying, you know, you can't regulate me or I'll shoot, right? I mean, the way the law normally works is you say to people, the law will not allow there to be barriers to entry in the abortion business that place an undue burden on abortion. As I noted before, I mean, these regulations about ambulatory surgical centers and these sorts of things are in place, and there are clinics all over America that are working within regulations of these, that are having admitting privileges for doctors. So the way that the world normally works is that somebody should have to enter the market and have a center that meets the standards and have doctors that are good enough that they can get privileges somewhere. So, I mean, it's a different issue. I think the standard by which we operate is that, especially in Texas, where there are a number of facilities that are open, and there's no problem if you were in Texas getting an abortion. In fact, Planned Parenthood's are no longer in the litigation, so they've all dropped out and not even sort of part of the argument there. You know, it shouldn't be a defense against regulation that you're not willing to meet the regulations. I mean, what should be the way it normally operates is this, you know, a reasonable regulation. Do other, you know, there are 440 facilities of various kinds in Texas that meet these regulations on the facilities, right? Do other doctors have admitting privileges and also perform surgery? I mean, these are the kinds of things that seem pretty reasonable. First thing is that there are plenty of facilities still open in Texas. And the other thing is that you should analyze the problem in terms of the type of regulation and whether it's reasonable.
Well, Chris, talk a little bit about your thoughts with respect to the significance of the Supreme Court's ruling in this case and when that might happen.
Well, we know that there will be a decision by the end of June because that's when the term ends. So what that means is that you have a phalanx of four liberal justices who will vote to strike down the regulation. And the question is, let's say you have Thomas Alito and Chief Justice Roberts are willing to uphold the regulation. The question then is whether Kennedy, who is one of the three justices who put the Planned Parenthood versus Casey standard in place, whether or not he's going to vote to uphold the regulations. Now, at the time of the oral argument, there seemed to be some kind of issues about whether or not there were facts that needed to be clarified and that there might be a remand back to the lower courts to have some questions answered. And the Supreme Court in that case is sort of, well, I mean, particularly Justice Kennedy may be looking to get some clarification on who is going to be the justice to fill the Scalia seat. And, you know, because maybe you might not want to approach this and make have a final decision with just a 4-4 majority. Now, a 4-4, body up there. It may be that, you know, he's going to side with the liberals and it'll be a 5-3 decision. But after Justice Scalia died, the best that could happen in terms of a pro-life position was, you know, if Kennedy aligned with us on everything, that it would be a 4-4 tie. They would uphold, you know, there would be no ruling deciding the issue, and then the Fifth Circuit decision would stand. But that wouldn't have any effect on, cases in other parts of the country. And so if you came from a part of the country where these kind of regulations were struck down, that Court of Appeals decision would be upheld. So in a way, there's kind of we're all in sort of a holding pattern until that that position is filled, assuming that Kennedy would vote to uphold these. If he's going to go and vote against the Texas regulations, then, you know, that would be 5-3. If the addition of another liberal, let's say, wouldn't matter, and the addition of a conservative would only make it 5-4. So, it's just a matter of whether or not what he's going to do, I think, is sort of a fair thing to wonder.
Well, we'll definitely be keeping our eyes open and be watching with great interest in this. And unfortunately with that, Chris, we're nearly out of time for this week, but I want to give you an opportunity to let our listeners know where they can go to learn more about your work at the Family Research Council.
Well, you can come to our website. It's www.frc.org if you're interested in learning more about this case.
Great. Well, thank you. And with that, Dr. Chris Kasik, I want to thank you for being with us on Family Policy Matters today, for your great work at the Family Research Council. We truly appreciate our partnership with FRC and just are grateful for your willingness to take some time out of your busy schedule to discuss this case with us. And thanks so much for the insights.
Yeah, the feeling is likewise. We know what great work you all do down in North Carolina. So it's very important to track these issues. And I'm hopefully we'll get a good ruling here and states like Texas.
Family Policy Matters is an information and analysis feature of the North Carolina Family Policy Council. Join us weekly for discussion on policy issues affecting the family. If you have questions or comments, please contact us at 919-807-0800 or visit our website at ncfamily.org.